All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. Today is the Power Hour. Let me take a look at questions are starting to roll in pretty heavy. If you want to jump in, you better press one on your phone pretty quick. And okay. Yep, we'll go ahead and get started. Here we go.
Money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking, and today is the Power Hour. Guys from Pittsburgh Power will be joining me. We'll take your calls and answer your questions about engines, performance, fuel mileage, maintenance, upgrades, modifications, emissions, troubleshooting, electrical, you name it. We'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and call. We're going to get to those calls in just a little bit. We'll bring in the guys from Pittsburgh Power right now. We've got Ethan and John. I think Bruce is going to be joining us in a little bit. Welcome, guys.
Hi, Kevin. Good to be here.
Good to be here, Kevin.
Yeah, great to have you back. So what's new and exciting these days, John? We missed you last week.
Yeah, sorry. I had a test to go do. It's a last-minute deal, but it was kind of worth doing. Not a whole lot. We're working on starting a rebuild program for VG turbos. The Cummins whole sets in particular for the CM2250 and 2350 are awful expensive. The reman turbo from Cummins is like $5,000. If you don't need the actuator, yeah. So I spent the whole morning trying to make a tool to put one back together that we took apart. I'm really close to having that done. So Cummins doesn't give you any info on how to do them. There are parts available online. We scooped up a kit that we found on the interwebs, and we're going over it and looked at it, and there were the pieces seem to be pretty high quality, and so we're venturing into that because it's a huge expense, and you know they're not going to last forever. They've got moving parts in them now and things to get carboned up, and so we're going to try and keep one or two of those on the shelf that we've rebuilt. But that's been my project last couple of days, been tinkering with that. Some interesting, got some emissions testing we're going to start this weekend in the shop, or later this week and maybe into the weekend. Keeping busy, learning stuff. A lot of interesting things happen. A quick update on the Dorothy while I've got everybody's attention. If you've got one ordered, we are getting closer. I'm really remiss in not getting kits completed yet, but I stay pretty busy on a bunch of stuff. I had a little setback with the PACCAR program. We built a really cool intake manifold that integrated it into it and mounted it up all nicely, and the computer didn't like the EGR flow. So I wouldn't say I'm back to the drawing board on that, but we're modifying it now to hopefully get to where we need to be, and that one will be available as soon as that's done. DD15s will probably be the first ones out the door. I'm really close on that. But that's what's going on with it. So anyone listening who's got one ordered, We're getting closer. I'll put some updates on the website soon. As soon as I have kits available, I'll put some photos up and let you know which ones are done first. But that's an update on that.
Good. All right. That sounds good. Sounds like you've been busy. I sent you, I want to go back and find it. I sent you an email earlier this week on that testing. Remember
yeah.
that one?
Yeah, actually, absolutely. The engine polygraph. That fellow had called me a while ago. I guess he listens to the show. He may be listening now if he is. Hello. We spoke quite a bit. I'm all for that. What they've done, it seems, has got some pretty extra sensitive sensors and some data logging equipment. And they're just using an oscilloscope to look at it. They could probably do a little better than that, but that's it's still pretty cool. So they're looking really, really fine at pressures and pressure drops and things within the engine to analyze engine health. It seems to me that seems feasible to me. It seems like something that you know, when you look at fine enough, you could see any leakage from a valve. You could pinpoint some blow by and things like that, and you could probably even see which cylinder it is if you got carried away enough with the data. And, you know, sampling rates could be high enough to do things like that. So, you know, it kind of comes from my world with the racing. We sample things like suspension movements at extremely high frequency. So I know that that's possible. And, yeah, I'm pretty impressed with it, actually. I think that's something that someone could add to their, you know, buying a new truck or something, have that engine angel report done on it. Seems like something that would be a worthwhile, investment.
Yeah, I was interested. I was looking back through here because I had several emails going back and forth on this. I thought I saw somewhere in here where the next thing they were going to test was an oil to check some, which would be really interesting to me because for years people have asked me, which oil's better? You know, you have premium oils, crazy expensive oils, standard oils. And I have said, and it's one of the reasons why I've never partnered with an oil company. I've had a lot that want to be a part of our show. And, you know, the great thing about them, they have tons and tons of money. But I couldn't take anybody's money because I couldn't honestly come on the air and say, yes, this is the oil that I chose and here's why. And I could never say definitively why one oil was better than another. So one of the things caught my attention was that they were going to do some testing on an oil. And I thought that'd be really interesting if we could have some definitive answers about how different oils affect the engine.
Absolutely. Yeah, it could, you know, you'll see if it affects ring seal or not, which oils can have an effect on there. There's definitely, you know, the way they gas off, if their stuff is fussy enough, they might be able to see, you know, when the fresh oil goes in, you know, you could all smell it. Anytime you change your oil, you know, there's something coming out of it, right? So, yeah. You know, that might be something that that you could actually see and put some numbers to and, you know, get some ideas to how quickly the oil oxidizes or not. And yeah, there's a lot you could do there. I don't know if you could do anything there to measure actual drag, you know, if you could do efficiency or, you know, anything with that, the way they're looking at pressures and such to see if you're actually, you know, creating less friction. But you might be able to do that with temperatures, though. I mean, there are other ways to look at that and quantify it as well. But yeah, I find it interesting. You know me, I love data, and that's all that is. That's a data collection system, and you zoom way in and you see exactly what's going on inside the engine based upon, you know, intake pressure and exhaust pressure and crankcase pressure.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. I just didn't have time to dive into it, and I know you are a freak about data, so I sent it to you. you would know something about it, and you would dig into it further, and I could ask you about it.
I've had a couple of really nice conversations with that fellow too. He's called me a few times. He actually called me yesterday right after that. He didn't know my email address here, so he Googled me and found my all my racing stuff and sent it to my racing website email. And yeah, so he got to me that way. But then he didn't wait for me to call him though. He called me and I said, "Yeah, Kevin just forwarded this to me. I mean, I was gonna give you a ring anyway, but the chatty fellow, he wants to come visit us, so I'd like to get him in. It maybe be something we could add to our dyno services. It might be you know, we might be able to add that type of data logging to when we dyno. Yeah, because right now we look at blow by on a you know with a manometer, you know, a wet tube manometer. You just look at watch it how far it pushes the water up the straw. So we're not really looking that closely right now when we do this. So that's something I'd like to maybe we could something I could talk to him about and we could add to our services here.
Good. That'd be awesome. I love data too. I hate guessing at things or, you know, well, and we do the best we can sometimes with just long-term experience, but the oil thing has always been, you know, I kind of just kept coming back to Rotella for a lot of reasons. And you added one that I wasn't even really focusing on, but I've been through, I even had a business partner, that was the sole distributor for Royal Purple Oil. And when I looked at all the, you know, I got to go down to the plant and yeah, I spent a lot of time around it and I loved the stuff. I used it in all my trucks. I had a lot of other people using it. It worked great results, but there was nothing I could point to and say, here's why it's better. you know, we got great extended drains out of it. We, you know, the base held up well, all the things you could kind of measure. But it was, you know, I could also say that about Rotella. And Rotella was certainly a whole lot cheaper. So I've never been able to just say, this is absolutely better and here's why.
Yeah, I agree. That's I guess I've pushed things a lot harder than you. So the particular oil you just spoke of there happens to be the only oil we ever blew up Mazda rotaries with. So and you can blow up a Mazda rotary, believe it or not. It takes about 13,000 RPM to do it, but they do break, which really only happens on a mechanical over rev, meaning an errant downshift. Driver's a little rambunctious on the downshift and or move the shifter the wrong direction or something like that. So. About the only thing that will blow a rotary up is a mechanical overrev, and our Mazda rotaries that we raced with Rotella 540 in them, that was the only oil I ever used in racing, to be honest with you. I steered away from all the racing oils, never blew one up.
Wow.
And then we got this deal. Pallets of oil showed up at the shop for free. I'm like, yeah, let's run this stuff. It happened to be purple. And
yeah.
we blew up two engines.
Wow. Crazy. So
in a situation I know I'd been in before with the Rotella, and I blame it on the zinc. It's that's the last line of defense, and whenever everything's gone wrong, the zinc's what's helping you out, and there just wasn't enough zinc in it, to my liking anyway. And that's what I hang on that. I could be wrong, but that's experience has told me that as much zinc as possible is the best. So,
you know,
yeah, we are building a relationship here with DA Lubes. I posted a little blurb on Twitter and Facebook yesterday. They're an Indiana company. They're American owned, and they use Pennsylvania crude for all their oils. Smaller company, and you know they're active in motorsport, and they make some pretty good product. And so our shop oil is now the DA Lube 1540, which it's got the same zinc numbers as the and base numbers as Rotella. Actually, the base is a touch higher. But that's what we're running here at the shop now. So
good deal. All right. I've got to get to a break. We're going to come back. We're going to get to your calls and questions. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. Got Ethan and John here with me. We're talking about some oil and some new testing we're looking at, interested in. John, just to give you the history on the Royal Purple, when the very first truck that I put a bypass filter on from, I actually had it installed at the factory. It was a 95 Series 60 in a Ford over the road tractor. And I put the bypass filter on, you know, the whole thing about don't change your oil until the sample tells you to change it. And I thought that was kind of crazy. You know, almost everybody does when they hear that, you know, back in the 90s, we were changing oil on trucks at 10,000 miles was the standard back then. So I put this oil in and started sampling at 10,000 miles when I would have changed. And the sample kept coming back good. I got to like 200,000 miles and just couldn't take it anymore. I thought, I got to change the oil. You know, I just, as much as I want to trust this, I'm going to change the oil. So I did. That truck, I had it day one with the bypass filter on it, with Royal Purple in it. I took that truck to 1.3 million miles and I did four oil changes. The first one wasn't necessary. I just did it because couldn't take it anymore. The next one was a mistake. My shop had a new mechanic on the truck and he didn't know he wasn't supposed to change the oil. The third one, I think I had an injector. start streaming, and I got some fuel dilution, so we changed that one, and I don't even remember why I changed the fourth one. Probably, you know, some sort of contaminant got in. I was just blown away. You know, it 1.3 million miles on four oil changes was just incredible to me. So I kind of attributed it to both the filter and the oil. And that's why I kind of stuck with that oil for a long time. And then as I learned more and more about oil, I thought, you know, it really isn't that special. It's a good oil, but you're right. Now that you helped me learn more about zinc, I always knew about zinc from the fact that if we ever got coolant in the oil, the coolant would strip the zinc quickly. And then you would start to see wear metals and other problems. So, and then from you, I found out that the Rotella was high in zinc and you guys used it in racing. You know, sometimes we look at it because it's so common and it's cheap and it's everywhere and think, well, it must not be that great, but it really is a good oil.
It's amazing. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Shell makes some pretty good products.
Yeah. So I guess if I were ever going to partner with an oil, it might just be Rotella. They do have lots of money.
They do. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Leave it to me. I partner with a little company without any. So
I tend to do that too. So, all right. What do you say we get to some phone calls?
Hey, real quick, before you do that, I was listening to your show on Sunday. And a fella called in. It was an expediter. His engine had been replaced at a dealership some years ago. And he was concerned because the engine showed up as a 2008, even though it was a mechanical, old mechanical Cummins. Was that a rebroadcast or was that something that was occurring?
That,
and
you know, it's funny
calling,
you bring
asking
that
about
up.
ELDs.
Yeah, funny you bring that up because I was just thinking about that and I was trying to scroll back through my notes because I was going to bring it up and I couldn't find my notes quick enough. That was a live call. I think I told him to try to call in today.
Okay. He must have got a number off of the block. He's probably got like a production date of the engine block, which should have nothing to do with the engine serial number. Whoever did that engine should have kept his old tag, I think. And even if it's a newer number, the engine family should preclude it from any hassle about ELDs. I mean, just the fact that they put a new long block or short block in there should not do that. Then they never changed the the family of the engine. That would have been a huge conversion to put a 2008 engine into that truck. It would have been next to impossible. So, so I think whatever he's looking at, he must be looking at a production date on the engine block or something, but it should not lead anyone to believe that truck should have to use an ELD.
If it's a mechanical, doesn't even have an ECM.
There's not even ECM on it. I know, yeah. So it's quite obvious there, but, they should really not have any issues there.
Yeah, if I remember right, when I was talking to him, I kept saying that. I kept saying, look, if it's mechanical, that's clearly obvious. All we have to do is look at the engine. But I kept saying, I don't know how they could have built a 2008 as a mechanical engine. But, if for some reason you've got documentation and it claims this is a 2008 engine, you're going to have a problem. You need to find documentation that clearly shows, the what year this engine is built as. And I thought the same thing,
right?
That, he's getting some date just off the block that had nothing to do with the engine itself.
Yeah, that's even if you look at the serial number, should also lead to the family. So the engine family is what determines, more than anything, more than serial number even, what it is. So the EPA family should be way, way before any ELD thing. So he's, what was it, a 94 truck, wasn't it? Yeah.
94, 95.
So he's listening. Yeah, I don't think he's got anything to worry about. So that's my opinion.
Yeah. Good. There might have been one other call over the weekend that maybe that was the one I'm thinking of. I know I told somebody to call on Tuesday just so you guys could clear it up for sure. I think there was another one though. Maybe as we go through the calls, I'll remember it. Let's get to the calls. Let's go to Florida. Art, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you doing today?
Good. What's on your mind?
I've talked to you guys a couple different times here. I have the Kenworth from hell. But anyways, John was supposed to let me know when I can bring my tractor up and get the Dorothy put on. But one of the reasons why I'm calling today is I was listening to the radio today on Dave Nemo's show, and they had something about winter blends or winter additives. Which do you guys recommend? Because I always use Power Service, and I don't. And I know Bruce said something about Howes, but what was the best for the money? Would you say?
What's the coldest temperature you run in normally?
I usually run from Florida to upstate New York, and then up around there over to Oklahoma and stuff around that way. I would say probably the southeast and west around there.
You know what you're going to find, and I'll tell you, you know, in all the years I've been in this, either the fuel quality has actually gotten a little better for winter. I think it probably has. And the engines do a whole lot better. You, especially if you're running in the south, you can run all winter with no additives. I've just never seen any real need for them. And, you know, my number was kind of, if I knew I was going to be below zero, I might drop something in, especially if you bought your fuel in Florida, because there's actually zones for the fuel, and the farther north you go, the more they tend to create winter blend fuels. And in the south, they don't do it so much. So if you bought your fuel in Florida and you're going to end up way up north and it's going to be really cold, you might dump something in. I don't really have a preference. It's kind of like the oil. I couldn't tell really that one was in better than another. John, any thoughts on that?
I don't really have much of an opinion either. I know Bruce is really fond, you know, for lubricity anyway, the Lucas seems to help things out, but I don't know what that would do for you in the wintertime. I have no issues. I mean, I drive a Cummins Dodge year round and put nothing in it, and it gets really cold up here and it doesn't bother it a bit. But I do have luck with the, we don't sell it or have anything to do with it, but that old Dodge of mine's got a injector that gets a little funny once in a while, and I put a little Power Service in it and it fixes it.
Yes.
And other things I've put in it, don't touch, don't do a thing to it. It makes no difference at all.
Yeah.
So, you know, just based upon things that have worked for me personally, I've got no problem with the Power Service product. Don't get it on your fingers though, man. That stuff that's terrible. You pour it on your fingers and immediately taste it in your mouth. So there's something really, really aromatic in there. So it scares me anytime I get it on myself.
Well, thank you very much then. And I'm
you're welcome.
Forward to your phone call for the door.
Yeah, we're as I said earlier, a little announcement I made earlier, we're very close. And yours is Kenworth with a Cummins in it, right? So if you don't mind coming by here,
I have a pack car.
Oh, you have a pack car. Yeah, hang tight then. That didn't go so well last week. So that's good. Yeah, watch the website. So watch the website and listen to the show here. I'll let everybody know whenever I've got that ready to go. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I gotta have Ethan do a super tune on it too. So.
All right. So. Great.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. Have a great day.
All right. Look forward to seeing you.
Hey, John, he just reminded me of something strange coming up on a break anyway. There was an industrial solvent. Was it MEK or there was some industrial solvent?
Methyl ketone, MEK,
I think it was MEK that it was like people were using it. This was back when I was doing a lot of bodybuilding. I owned the gym and I had wrestled a lot. And I had a friend of mine that was, his dad was just a crazy, one of those guys that pushed his kids really hard. And when he would get like joint pain, I think they were using MEK. It would absorb right through your skin. And they were using it as some sort of a painkiller. It was crazy when you said you could taste it. But what happened one time, they had used rubbing alcohol for something and then the MEK. And he got trashed. Took the alcohol right through his skin. He almost got alcohol poisoning. Crazy stuff. All right, we're going to get to a break. We're going to come right back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. We're going to get right back to the calls. Ethan and John are with me. John, I did look it up. It was MEK. There's all kinds of articles about using it for, you know, pain and inflammation. Doesn't sound like a good idea to me, though.
That's what reacts with fiberglass resin to as a hardener is MEK. That's what you use is that. That's
really?
The clear liquid that you drip into fiberglass resin. Is yeah,
ooh.
Absolutely.
Not something I want to be ingesting because
no.
I guess it absorbs
so,
right through your.
My grandfather used to rub WD-40 on his knees and swear it worked. So.
Wow. Keeps them lubricated.
That
right?
seems less poisonous than
it does,
you know, than
yeah
than MEK. But yeah.
Yeah, I remember we used a ton of MEK in the Army, and you know it had a million labels all over it, skulls and crossbones, and all kinds of warnings, and you know don't use without ventilators and gloves, and you know, and then people started rubbing
right.
it on their body. Bad idea.
That's a bad idea. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
all
you
right,
know more. You know more about the health and the physiology thing than I. Whenever you do get something on your fingers like that and immediately taste it in your mouth, it's obviously gone through your system, right? Or is that just in your head?
Oh no, no. There are lots of substances. We, you know, look at pain patches, nicotine patches. That's the whole.
Right.
That's the mechanism. There are lots of substances, and many times what they do. They'll take the substance we want, like the opioid or the nicotine. It doesn't necessarily get absorbed right through the skin. They'll put a carrier, like MEK. That's probably not the one they use, but they'll put a carrier
right.
in that does make it absorbed through the skin. So that's a fairly common way of getting substances into our body is through the skin. So there are compounds that, yeah, if you touch it, that's exactly what's going to happen. And that taste thing is really common. I don't know the exact pathway or why that happens, but a lot of times when a substance gets absorbed through your skin, you almost immediately taste it.
Absolutely. Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sensitive to some. Another one does it to me is brake fluid. I get brake fluid on my fingers. My tongue, I taste it immediately. It's bizarre.
There's something in there that is one of those carrier compounds that goes right through, and it takes everything else with it. That's, you know,
yeah.
why it's kind of crazy, is anything else that's in that substance can get carried into the body with it.
Wow. Okay. Be careful
yeah.
with that stuff.
That's right. Yeah, if you taste something because you touched it, I'd start wearing gloves.
Yep.
All right, let's
That's
head
good
off.
Advice from Kevin.
Yeah, there you go. Let's head off to Wisconsin. Scott, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. How are you today?
Good. What's on your mind?
Good.
Hey, Kevin, I just wanted to call and say thank you. I was in Kansas City a couple weeks ago, so I called Chad down there at the alignment shop to have my truck checked because I've got a 99 379 that I've never done anything to the alignment, and I put 700,000 miles on it. I bought the truck with 1.2 on it. I just wanted to get it checked, and so we rolled it in the shop. Chad showed me how to check the feathering on tires and stuff and everything, and he told me to get out of the shop. There was nothing he could do to my truck. He said, look good. Don't take it to anybody else. He'll just screw it up. He said, when trucks scream at me, don't touch me because there's nothing wrong with me. He said, I don't touch them. He was an awesome guy.
Chad is the wizard, and he was trained by the best, Mike Beckett, you know, a long time ago, and he's certainly grown into his own. And John, you and I have talked about this, that whole system, and Chad is just amazing. My coach, the country coach, when I first got it, I put a brand new set of Michelin XEA2s on the front. They're like a $600 tire, it was 45,000 miles, and one of them was almost trashed. And I, you know, went back to country coach and I said, look, you got to align this thing. And they said, you know, we really don't align them. It's kind of a weird suspension system, and we can try a couple things, but we get this a lot. And it's not a big complaint in the RV world because a lot of people buy these coaches and only put 10,000 miles a year on them. or less. So by the time they get tire wear, they feel like they've had the tires for 4 or 5 years anyway, and it's not a big deal. So I went to Chad, and I said, Chad, look at this thing. Is there any way to align this? And he looked at it, and he said, yeah. He said, I've seen this once before. He let me work on it. And we were at the CMC. He spent a couple hours on it for me, figured it all out. That thing goes so straight down the road, and I've got probably 50,000 more miles on it. The tires look like new.
Yeah, he was good. He spent about an hour on my truck, checked the front end, checked the wheel bearings in the back, and he said, I can't find anything wrong with it. There's nothing. That's why I just wanted to get a check, because I've never had a check. Charged me $75 and said, I'm not touching it. There's nothing wrong with it. So if I would have went somewhere else, who knows what they would have done to my truck and how much problem I would have had later on. You know?
Oh, no.
So I just wanted to call and say thanks.
I can tell you exactly what about 95% of the alignment shops would have done. They put it on the computer because that's all they're ever taught how to do. They don't measure things themselves. They put it on the computer, which could be way out of calibration. There's all kinds of other problems it can have. And if the computer tells them something needs to be adjusted, no matter what they're seeing with their own eyes, they adjust it. And most of the time, they end up making it worse. It's really, it's one of those industries in trucking that needs a complete overhaul. It is amazing how many bad alignments you get.
Well, I just had to call you and tell you that, you know, he showed me where to check the feathering in my front tires, and I got 90,000 miles on my front tires, and he said, look at them. He said, they're glass smooth. He said, there's nothing wrong with it. Just leave it alone.
Perfect. Now, I wish I had that kind
of...
Yeah, I was going to say, I wish I had that kind of good news on your oil sample, but it looks like my grandkids got a hold of your oil sample with a box of crayons.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, what can we do about that soot?
John, help me out with this one. I'll
what
give
is
you
it? What engine is it?
It is an
N14.
N14, okay.
So I'll give you some history.
How many miles are on it?
581. That on an in-frame?
581. No, that's on a reman.
Reman, okay.
Okay.
And 22,000 on the current oil sample, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so John, let me give you some history. We're at 581 now, going back to 398,000. A sample came up with 6.2% soot. That's really
Whoa.
High. The next sample came up at 3. What went on back then that it dropped from 6.2 to 3? You remember?
Well, we only had 14,000 miles on that oil sample, though, too.
Okay.
One went 3.
Right.
And anytime I get over that, then it starts building.
Yeah. So, and that's kind of an unusual pat. But even 3 is really high, especially with only 14,000 miles on the oil. Then we go to 26,000 miles on the oil. We're at 3.6. Then when we got to 53,000 miles on the oil, John, we're at 7.2. That is off the charts. And the viscosity at that time, John, 30. That's like tar.
It's only going to go up. Yeah. That's like
yeah,
tar.
So
yeah.
Now.
Well, 7% soot. That's a lot. What
is
that? 10 gallons? What's the. You think about that, yeah, or 11 gallons, whatever that holds. That's a lot of soot.
That's a crazy amount of soot. So now with 22,000 miles on another sample, we're at 6.4, and viscosity is at 20. Something is really wrong with this thing.
Does it make a lot of blow-by? How much blow-by have you got? Any issues there?
Well, no, not too much. And what I did there is, the old N14, you know how they got the one tube coming off the top of the motor, and they've
You've got two.
And so, I went and got another one out of the junkyard and put another one on, so I got two.
Okay.
And then,
you don't see a whole lot of
you don't see a
whole lot of vapor coming out of there.
Just a little bit. If you put your hand on it, you can feel it just a little bit. You know, not a lot.
Okay.
I did change the air to air about 30,000 miles ago, 35,000 miles ago. I found my air-to-air was leaking, so I put a new air-to-air on. I put all new rubber boots connecting the air-to-air. I found a hole. I put new motor mounts on the truck, and the bottom of the air cleaner crossover tube touched the top of the motor and caused me a hole in there. So I got that fixed. And I had overhead ran.
Okay, hold that thought. Hold that thought. This could be a mystery, but we may have to get our hands on this one to check some things. But we're going to talk about it more right after this break. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. John and Ethan are with me, and we are talking to Scott in Wisconsin. So, John, any other thoughts?
Ethan and I were discussing this a little bit. Does it make any black smoke? I mean, does the engine, is it run nice and clean? Are you getting decent fuel mileage?
You know what? I think we just lost him. The call just disappeared off the board. Yeah, I'm trying to look at. No, we lost him completely. It just disappeared off the board. Did he address exhaust restriction at all?
No, he didn't. That's what our thought was. You know, the only things that could be are piston rings, obviously. You guys all tell me if the overhead's out, it could cause soot. I haven't got my head around how that happens yet. If the valves go loose, they only open for a little less time. I don't know how that creates more soot in the oil, or if they're tight, I can maybe see something then, because you end up with some more overlap to blow some exhaust back in during overlap. But that's suddenly going to act kind of like EGR. So yeah, I don't know about that. But valve guides, or valve guide seals that are bad or missing would definitely do it. Now, what else do you think? Excessive back pressure.
Yeah,
make piston sure rings. Or if the engine's just plain running dirty, if he's got a problem, you know, if it's, you know, making some black smoke, if it's just generally creating more soot, obviously that's going to end up making that number go up. So, yeah, I'd like to talk to him some more if we get him back. So,
I think Bridget just got him back. Let me go down and see if I can. Yep, there he is right there. Scott, we got you back. Go ahead.
Thanks. And as far as the exhaust restriction, I got 8-inch straight pipes. It does have flow through mufflers in the center spools in my straight pipe, but I mean, you could throw a softball to the center of it.
Yeah, that's definitely not it. that's definitely not the exhaust restriction. You've got which turbos on it, do you know?
It's got just the factory turbo.
Factory turbo?
I mean, I could, it puts up to 5.25. I've got a Pittsburgh power box in here, and on zero with everything shut off, on a hard pull, I can get 35 pounds of boost out of its factory.
Oh, wow, that's strong.
And
I don't know, any thoughts, Ethan?
I'd want to make sure that the right ECM program's in it for the CPL. Just in case someone put the wrong one in there.
We lost him again. He's obviously in a bad...
Again? Okay.
Yeah, we lost him again. You know, Ethan, I'm almost thinking that after everything we've heard, you're probably on the right track there. I can't imagine what else could cause this thing to create that level of soot. That may be the highest I've ever seen.
It might be worth taking a look at the ECM sensor values too, to make sure one's not reading in an extreme, but still within range. So like if the coolant temp, you know, the ECM thinks the coolant temp's right, always at like 68 degrees, even though it's not, it could be overfueling, attempting to, thinking it's in cold mode, cold warm up.
This sounds more like it must be something electrical. I mean, anything mechanical, it seems like it's already been addressed and would just jump right out at you. So I think that if you hooked up to this, you might be able to find this problem. Let's head off to West Virginia. Gus, welcome to the program.
Hey guys, I got a battery question. I just wanted to know what a typical draw in amps your starter pulls off of it, because I just installed a disconnect, and I'm not sure if maybe I installed a big enough disconnect or not, because now my truck starts, but it just seems like the starter is working a little harder now to start the truck than before I had the disconnect. Any thoughts? I put in a recommended disconnect from one of my truck suppliers, 70 amp. With a 20 amp continuous. So I was just wondering, does my starter draw more than 70 amps to start the truck? And maybe that's why, maybe it's just the disconnect is too small, or?
I'd say 20 amps continuous sounds a little light to me. I could be wrong.
Okay,
yeah, I've actually looked.
Just going by the recommendations from the guy who sold me the disconnect over the counter. That's all.
Right. Yeah, if there's a bigger one available, you might try that if it's fairly inexpensive. You might just want to try it, or bypass it quickly and see if it cranks quicker.
That's what I would think. Just bypass it with a bolt.
Yeah, just put both, or put them both with both eyes on the same post of the disconnect. You basically bypass it that way, and you do a back to back on it and see. But 20 amps continuous sounds a little low to me.
Okay, and as far as the top end, the 70 amps max struck, because I had a choice of three or four different disconnects, and I did cheap out with the cheaper one, which is like $80. The other ones were in the hundreds. So I wasn't sure what the typical draw was on a standard starter. I don't know. I wasn't sure if you guys had that answer or not.
I personally don't know. I don't know. Ethan might have a better idea what one of those starters will draw, but yeah.
No, my multimeter doesn't go that high. They only do about 10 amps, and then it blows the fuse. And
right. So you can't tell with the multimeter. I'm thinking it's more than 20. 20 amps just does not sound like enough to crank an engine around to me. It really doesn't.
Okay. And I had a quick oil comment. I've been using the Rotella T3 for the last 7 years, and I switched to the T4 when it came out. And I'm just noticing my oil consumption is all over the map now. Is that just coincidence, or would there be a difference between the T3 and the T4 with their new formulation?
Well, the T4 is a semi-synthetic, so if it's an engine that's got some wear, there is a chance you will consume a little more with it. I personally haven't seen that, but that's what we hear around here. I'm not sure, Kevin, what's your opinion on that? And it's only a semi, it's not a full synthetic, so it's not that crazy slick. So, yeah, I don't know what, Kevin, what's your experience with semi-synthetics?
You know, I like one or the other. I haven't really been a big fan of the blend. It's almost like a compromise, and I don't see enough of either characteristic that we're looking for. So, you know, if we've got old worn out engines, we just go back to the straight mineral oil. And when we have a good healthy engine, I prefer synthetic. The middle ground to me seems just like a compromise that doesn't seem to serve either purpose very well. Now, the one thing I will say is oil today right now is a brand new world. I mean, we're seeing it in oil samples. I've talked about the base numbers. This is probably the most drastic change in oil I've seen in the 30 years I've been following the APIs.
Well, that's what I was getting at, because they're phasing out the T3 with the new T4 because of the new classifications of the oils. And that's why basically I was just wondering, because I can't get T3, or it's really hard to get the T3 Rotella anymore. And now, they switched it over to the T4 because of those new, I can't remember the names, the J or the K, where they're phasing out the older classifications and the newer one, but they're making it. And then they've even got a newer classification for the newer engines only. And the one for my engine, it's backwards compatible, so it can be used on older engines, the T4. which is kind of why I was kind of questioning my oil consumption because of the Rotella T3 to the T4 because of the new classifications of oils, the new blend, or the, not a blend,
right,
but a new the new K or J letter that they just came out with. So, okay, I appreciate
it. Yeah, and it's more confusing than that because now for the first time ever, we have two classifications. It's always been one, and they've always been backwards compatible. Now we have one that is backwards compatible and one that isn't. One that's strictly for the new engines. I think that's the CK4. And then we have the backwards compatible that works in any engine. But both of those new APIs are extremely different from the oils we used to run. So I don't even have definitive answers on anything yet. We're kind of feeling our way through this. I think they're great oils, but they're definitely acting different. Let's see. We'll try to get to this one real quick here. Let's go to Michigan. Damon, you got about a minute and a half.
A minute and a half, that's good. Hi, Kevin Rutherford. How you doing?
Good. What can we help you with today?
Okay, yeah, you can hear me? Yeah, okay. Yeah. I got a 2008 Peterbilt with a diesel particulate filter, and I keep hearing contradictory things. Some people tell me if I take the DPF system off, I won't have any issues. Well, Caterpillar told me if I take the DPF system off, it's a good chance the motor will blow because it'll have uncontrolled horsepower or something like that.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Uncontrolled horsepower. Wow. Don't let that get out because everybody will be taking them off.
Well, if you take it off, you're going to have other problems. It's not going to be uncontrolled horsepower. It's going to be uncontrolled check engine lights and other issues depending on who does the work on the software. And it'll be an inability to have it worked on at just about any shop that you wander into in the country. So that'll be a problem too. So it's really not the way to go. If you're having issues, I mean, we could probably help you out. With the DPF maintenance and give the system a going over and make sure everything's working the way it should be. Other than that, yeah, you're not gonna have uncontrolled horsepower issues. Trust me.
Yeah, yeah, and it's not gonna blow up, but that you still shouldn't be doing it. We went through the delete phase back when we didn't know any other way around some of these problems. That's over. We're not recommending deleting anything anymore. We know how to get these things running right. I say we. I'm talking about you guys at Pittsburgh Power. So don't be deleting anything. Get it over to them. Get it running right. You'll be happy. All right, we've got to wrap up this show. We're going to get to another one. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs. Back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. Today is the Power Hour. I've got Ethan and John with me from Pittsburgh Power. We're going to take your calls and answer your questions about everything maintenance, engines, performance, fuel mileage, horsepower, torque, upgrades, modifications, emissions, electrical, you name it. We'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and call. Ethan and John, welcome back, guys.
Good to be back.
Good to be back, Kevin.
All right. Hey, John, we had a call at the end of the last show. Kind of a mixed message. Cat told him if you took off the DPF, you'd blow up the engine because it had uncontrolled horsepower. It's amazing
That's a good one. Yeah.
Like I said,
I hope it was like the wash boy at that cat dealership or someone who swept or cleaned the floors. I don't know anybody who was supposed to know anything.
Yeah, that's a good point. And we certainly don't want that rumor getting out. You'll have people under there with hacksaws cutting everything off so they can get unlimited power. but why don't you address that? And, you know, there was a time that you know, when we first started seeing all the emissions problems, and we tried everything, we couldn't keep these things running right, we couldn't get any fuel economy out of them. And there was that move to just delete it, get rid of it. You know, these guys are going broke, we have to do something for them. And we're well past that now. Why don't you address that?
Well, we're gaining an understanding of how these systems work, you know, and understandably, everybody was just angry about it. I think the manufacturers were probably angry about having to put them on the trucks. So the whole thing came to be with the wrong attitude. But fact of the matter, now here in 2017, the stuff works. And, you know, at least our shop, and we're always learning. I mean, it's we're really trying to carve a niche there in the our ability to maintain and surface that stuff. And, you know, I'd be a fool to tell you that we could fix every problem you have, or that, you know, you're going to leave and it's never going to get a check engine light again. But, you know, we'll reduce those. And sometimes you got to come back once or twice before we get it sorted out. They are complicated systems, you know, in their, shall we say, you know, mechanics and electronics. But the way it works is quite simple. And once you understand how it works, it's really not that big of a deal. So, you know, to me, it's, you know, maintain it and, you know, make sure the sensors that are telling it what to do and what not to do are doing the right things. And, you know, the thing's just not running, you know, making too much soot. And, you know, there are little things that can go wrong that have knock-on effects that make it a whole lot worse. And, you know, daily we're learning more and more about it. You know, like I said, we did an EGR DPF maintenance and a Dorothy install on a truck and just last week, and it went down the road and said another check engine light. So, you know, one of the sensors that we'd had off, I don't know if because we disturbed it or whatever, but, you know, we had to come back and do a little more work on it. But bit by bit and piece by piece, we're getting better and better at it. We've got a good understanding of the systems. And again, the newer stuff, you know, I got to say 14 and up or 12 and up, it's pretty darn good. It really is. Now, his era, it's 08. You know, we know more about it now, so we're better at fixing those earlier ones and making them a little bit better. You know, there's some work that we could do with that and make it more reliable for him. It's just a better way to go. It just is.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, like I said, back when we were talking about that, we were just desperate. We were trying to do anything to help people keep these trucks on the road, keep them running. The breakdown rate was outrageous. And for an owner operator, that was just killing people. Not only was it costing them a fortune to get them fixed, but it also meant a lot of downtime and lost revenue. So, you know, we did the best we could back then, but we're well past that again. There are so many reasons not to do that. And the reason I bring this up and I wanted you to address it, and we're talking about it, is there are still lots of shops doing it. And now I'm saying, look, that is not the way to go. It's expensive. There are lots of shops doing it wrong, creating more problems than they're fixing. And then you mentioned you've got the issue of the factory shops won't touch that truck. And if the EPA ever, you know, gets wind of it, you've got real problems to deal with.
Oh, our local Freightliner deal will tow it off the premises.
Is that right?
If a truck is towed in there or comes in there, they will tow it off the premises. It'll go right outside their gate and be dropped and you're stuck. So yeah, or if they get into it and they find that it's been deleted, they will literally just stop where they are and tow it off the premises. So that's something you could have to deal with. It, you know, who knows when you're going to have a problem or where you're going to have a problem, or, you know, it could be something as simple as your clutch. You know what,
yeah,
I mean? You
right.
Go into a shop,
right.
Get, you know, so it's just not worth it. I just don't see it being worth it. You know, the problem is, and again, it's not going to be like it all. There is going to be maintenance to do. You know, you're going to have to look at this stuff every quarter of a million or so is what we're recommending, and seems to be about the right number. And if you do that, it won't be a problem. No, you're not just going to hop in. It's not going to be completely invisible to you. There will be an issue here or there, but I don't think it's worth, you know, the aggravation of actually getting rid of it.
All right. What do you say we get some phone calls?
Let's go.
All right. This was the other call. Here we go. We're going to go to Kentucky. And I found out the answer to this question, but you guys know this issue better than I do, so I'll let you answer it. John in Kentucky, go ahead.
Thank you. I was just calling back to see what your answers were.
All right. So I'll kind of catch these guys up. I went and did the research on it, and I figured out where the confusion was coming in. But I'll let you guys address this. So, John and Ethan, I had a call over the weekend. It was John, and he was questioning Fitzgerald, they give two options. One is the factory Detroit engine, or one is an engine that they build. And I wasn't aware that they were doing that. I couldn't remember all the details. And somebody else sent me a message and said that the factory engine was a 16-to-1 compression and Fitzgerald was 15-to-1. Sounded totally backwards to me, but I didn't want to argue it because I didn't know at the time. But I went back and found out. But are you guys aware of the differences in what they're building?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. We've seen both out of there. I'm not sure if the end user has the ability to request which pistons go into the engine, or if it's built to what they call either a PK or a BK spec. The PK is 15-to-1, I believe. I hope I don't have that backwards. And the BK is the 16.5. We did a lot of work on this. We inadvertently, we had a customer who had a glider, and he had a lot of white smoke when it was cold. He was from the north. And I'm not sure if Detroit changed the nomenclature, the way they measure the compression ratio of the piston, but I researched it. So we actually did CC. We measured up an engine. We put one of each piston in, and we measured the actual volume of the swept and unswept area and did the math on it and came up with what the compression ratio was. So in order to get to 15-to-1, you need their 16.5 piston. And their 15-to-1, it's down somewhere in the high 13s. And, you know, that's great for limiting NOx. And what we think happened was when Detroit went on their low NOx kick, when they reprogrammed everybody's computers, and I think they modified their parts. I think they dropped the compression ratio. And so that's why lately there have been problems with the 15-to-1 engine. So if they're going to build you a 15-to-1 engine, unless you stay in the deep south, don't do it. Just don't. You'll have white smoke and grief that you just won't believe in, if you're up north or if you ever go anywhere where it's cold.
Yeah, I'd always recommend the factory reman.
Right.
The serial number will be different too. It starts with an 06RE rather than the 06R0.
Okay, I didn't know that.
So you can always tell if it's a factory reman by the first four digits.
Okay. That solves my problem. Factory reman.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if you're in the southwest or in Texas, so depending on where you run, if it never gets cold where you are, you're okay with the 15-to-1, but be careful, you know, ask which compression ratio is in it, especially if you go anywhere cold.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. You know, John and Ethan, what they used to do, and I know when you guys were working with them more directly than I was they had the local Detroit shop built the basic engine for them right there on site. And then they were adding on the gliders, they were adding the Pittsburgh power manifold, the turbo and the muffler, which I thought was just an excellent, add on. Now it sounds to me like what I've been told is now it's either the full factory reman, no modifications, or if you want the manifold and some of the other parts, you build their engine. And it just, I wasn't clear on exactly what they were doing in their build.
Yeah, we've seen both. I think that, I can't speak to it. I think it might depend on the cores that they have available or what they're working with down there. They do so many now. A friend of mine had a tour that their facilities, not facility anymore, it's facilities, and
yeah.
Was completely amazed. And he called it more of an engine building operation than the glider build. He said there's more energy dedicated to rebuilding engines to supply
Wow.
all the gliders that they're building than there is in actual building the gliders. So it really is an engine operation. They've got a whole facility dedicated to cores, to tear down and cleaning and prepping and everything of the cores. So that's all grown since you and Bruce were down there from what I understand. I hear it's a really impressive facility. I hear it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. All right, we're going to get to a break. We're going to come right back, get to more of your calls and questions right after this. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. Ethan and John are with me from Pittsburgh Power. We're going to go right back to the phones. We are off to Texas. Marvin, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. I have a 2017 Peterbilt 579 with an MX-13, and I think I'm burning coolant. So this truck has been a nightmare. I picked it up in February. It's been in the shop like 25 days for various reasons. And so the last time I had it at my company, even though I'm a lease purchase guy, I said, hey, guys, I've had to put coolant in this thing. Can you check it out? So they call me and they say, hey, we pressure tested it. It's not leaking. What's the problem? I said, well, right now, I dropped it off at just the right time. The light's on for low coolant, you know. And they said, oh, okay. And they really don't want to deal with it, especially since I'm buying the truck. So I get a phone call, your truck's ready. We found a small leak on the lower hose, which is total bullcrap as far as I'm concerned. I pre-trip it every day. I've never seen a wet spot or anything. So basically, I'm wondering, I just can't afford to just stay in the Peterbilt dealers. I mean, every one little questions are becoming very expensive. You know, what should I be looking for, pushing for? You know, what do I do in this case? How do I know for sure, you know, what's going on with it? What can I do?
How many miles are on it?
I just went over 77,000. The first time I had to add about a half a gallon of coolant was about 20,000. And then again at about 40, 45,000, a little more. All total at 77,000 miles, I put about a gallon and a half of coolant in it so far.
That's significant. Yeah, you should see that somewhere.
Unless it's going internal.
Unless it's internal, yeah. You might have to... There are ways to test for combustion in the coolant. There are ways to, you could sample the, there are chemicals that will react if with the coolant that will tell you if you've got some combustion making its way there. I don't know if it's, there are a number of ways to test for that. I think that would be next. Because if it's burning it, unless it's going through the intake somehow, there's a chance that there's also a little bit of exhaust the other direction. So you should be able to do that. Obviously, they check the obvious stuff like the EGR cooler, you know, that's been tested and looked at.
I know for sure they pressure tested it and they said that it did not have a leak. And then they called me back with the story about the lower hose. So, I don't think that they did any other test. And it's one of those situations, you know, what you're telling me, I'm assuming isn't something I should have to go tell them to do, right? They should know. Right.
And it's 77,000 miles. The PACCAR's got a pretty awesome major parts warranty up to $500,000. So there's something you ought to be able to, if you've logged that consumption, you should be, able to do something, at the dealer. Talk to PACCAR. But you should definitely be able to.
They ought to take care of that for sure. Even like a little minor, clutch issue. I spent 6 days at a dealer, stuck in the hotel and stuff. So I don't know. It's one of those things. What are you going to do? Are you guys doing warranty work now for PACCAR at Pittsburgh?
We are not. Yeah, though we can work on them. We have access to the software and to their, to a lot of stuff there. We cannot do warranty work. Unfortunately, that's not going to happen.
Right. All right. Well, I'll keep digging. I sure appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, can you stay in touch with me if you would. I might be able to help you out. So track that coolant consumption closely, and I've got some friends at PACCAR I might be able to help you out with. Okay.
John, you guys were doing the heavy lifting there, so I got sidetracked. Somebody was sending me an urgent message. Did we talk about oil sampling at all to see if we had coolant in the oil?
We did not. We skipped right over that. So that's okay. A good idea, though. Yeah.
Yeah. Get an oil sample done, and let's see if we've got any coolant in the oil. Let's head to California. Corbin, welcome to the program.
Hi, guys. I had a question about a 2015 ISX on the diesel particulate filter. I've got 230,000 miles on it, so I'm coming up on the quarter million, kind of tear everything apart and clean it. But it's got a status gauge inside on the dash, and it's never moved. It's for the supposedly for the restriction. And I was wondering if you guys have run across that and if it's actually accurate or could be accurate.
I've never actually seen one on the dash before. I'm assuming the truck does an active regen when it...
Uh-oh.
Yep, I got a beep.
Yeah, you Ethan, there? John, you guys there?
Yep, we're here. Yep.
Okay, go ahead. We got some weird beep here, and then you cut out, but we can hear you now.
Oh, okay. Well, I was making the truck, as long as it's still doing its active regen there, I don't know the accuracy of that gauge. It could just be something that the ECM is spitting out as a, you know, an estimate for it.
Okay. Yeah, it'll do an active every once in a while. You know, you'll hear the idle or see the idle on the tack come up just a little bit, and it'll have the hot exhaust light come on the dash. But
yep,
it's very
yep.
rare, and I pull the grapevine quite a bit, you know, probably four times a week going back and forth to L.A. So one of the mechanics I was talking to said it might still be pretty clean, but I'd rather not find out, you know, going down the road that I'm going to have a problem. I'd rather pull it out and get it done right.
The mechanic's probably right. Pulling the grapevine that often probably keeps it nice and clean. You're making good exhaust temp, and that should be staying pretty clean.
Okay. Well,
yeah,
that's good news.
The newer systems get much better as they get newer. Because Cummins has had time to, you know, to learn from their mistakes. All the OEMs have on that one, because, you know, at first they were rushed a little bit, and, well, rushed product gets rushed results.
Right, and I don't want unlimited horsepower, so I'll just kind of keep it on there.
Who would want that?
Yeah, with the 6x2, it already will spin the tires. So. Okay, well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to California. Joe, welcome to the program.
Hi, I wanted to make a comment on the previous show about a caller saying that he used to use a T3 Rotella, and you guys made a comment that T4 was semi-synthetic. T4 is still mineral oil, it's still at 1540. T5, it's semi-synthetic, and T6 is the full synthetic.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, there's more T3. It got converted to T4. It's the new formula.
Well, thank you.
You know that.
Yeah,
cause
that's what
that happens. Funny, that happens in your thyroid too. Your thyroid converts T3 to T4. Just thought I'd throw that in there. You know, I don't know, but as much as I do like Rotella, I do have to say that their whole T numbering scenario has gotten really confusing lately. I don't even use the designations. Once we get through this transition, maybe it'll clear up again, but that seems probably correct, that we now it's 4, 5, and 6 mineral blend and synthetic, but they've had a little confusion with their naming scenario there. So thanks for that, Joe. We're going to head off to Indiana. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. See, I'm running this Schneider glider. Had it in at Pittsburgh Power back in February. And I got an oil sample, and I almost feel embarrassed compared to the other guy. I'm looking pretty good. I want to read you over that with me and tell me why I got this little bit of soot that I got. Had a little fuel illusion.
You know, honestly, on a Series 60, I would call this a little more than a little. Clearly not what we were looking at on that N14. But just to give you some numbers here, John, pretty consistent. We had a sample at 290,000 miles. That would be on the rebuild on the engine, I would imagine, and 20,000
right.
on the oil. We had 3.9 on fuel dilution, which is borderline true fuel dilution. The soot was 2.7. That's really high on a Series 60. We like to see those at less than 0.1. Just this recent sample with 320,000 miles on the engine and 32,000 on the oil, or 30,000 on the oil, we're still at 3.9 on fuel dilution, and we're at 2.3 on soot. So we're going to get to a break. We'll come right back. We'll talk about those numbers right after this. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. I'm going to get right back to the phone calls. We were talking with Dave in Indiana. So, John, just to give you more detail. Go ahead.
I got a detail to add also. I just put on my OPS 15,000 miles ago, and and I'm idling less than I was on the previous sample. But that previous sample, I also had put in the Lucas injector cleaner, and I haven't put any since then. Okay.
Okay.
I don't know if that makes a difference or not with the soot.
I don't think either one of those should really make much of a difference. John, here's really, we're looking at high soot and high oxidation, so I'm thinking blow-by.
That's blow-by, yeah. Yeah, that's for where I'm going with that, too. How high was the fuel dilution?
3.9. You know,
that's pretty
good.
That's pretty high too.
Yeah.
Do we know the history of the injectors on this truck?
Let me just add one thing. The fuel dilution, John. When we started seeing all the biodiesels and the new fuel blends, OPS, the lab, Polaris upgraded their equipment to gas chromatography. So theirs is really, really sensitive on fuel dilution. I've actually been saying that 2 on a Polaris sample is like 0 used to be. So I would look at this as more like about 1.9 in fuel dilution, and the viscosity on a 1540 is right at 13. So I don't think there's a lot of fuel dilution in there. I think there's some.
Right. Yeah, you'd see that in the viscosity if it were. Yeah, maybe
right.
An issue.
No, that oxidation. I heard you talk about the numbers are kind of high with the new blend oils, with them oxidation. So I didn't really pay attention to that.
Well, what we see with the new blend oils is the base really dropping, and yours isn't. Your base is holding up beautifully, but when we see oxidation and soot, That really means we're exposing that oil over and over to the combustion gases, which is flow by.
Okay. Okay, now what do we look at?
Do you have any oil consumption?
No, none. Barely any. I mean, I got 30,000 on this last oil change. I put in a gallon, but I also put in the OPS filter, so that took a third of that gallon anyway. So Yeah, right. 20,000 before I was putting a gallon in before I put the OPS on.
And do you know if the, well, we don't think the fuel dilution's an issue. I've seen some Detroit injectors. A lot of people, even though the engine's rebuilt, they'll leave the injector in. Everyone expects the injectors to go a million plus nowadays, which makes zero sense to me. But they do. We've seen some injectors that actually leak around the plunger. So we've pressurized some injectors on guys who've had high fuel dilution, and you get bubbles up around the plunger. So keep them, if the injectors are old, if they weren't replaced when the engine was rebuilt, a set of injectors might bring that under control, but it's not going to do anything for the soot. I don't think it'll help with that at all.
Okay.
But what I would do is I would run it. I would maybe think twice about extending the drains too long. Run the oil until that number gets to something you're not comfortable with, and then change it. I'd keep running it until you had a problem.
Okay, because that's what I've been doing. And
Yeah, there's nothing in the sample that would worry me. We're not seeing any increased wear metals. The soot isn't. You know, at two, these oils, from what the engineers tell me, are designed to hold up to 5% and 6% soot and keep it separated so it doesn't create problems. I tend to disagree. When we get to 5 or 6, it's going to create problems. But at where you are it's not hurting the engine. We just always look at it as, is there something we could be doing to improve it? Do we have, you know, intake issues? We have exhaust, you know, something we could do to fix it. And if we've checked everything and there's nothing, I'm with John. Go ahead and run it. It's not hurting anything.
Okay, great. Because I just put on my Pittsburgh Power muffler, got the Fleet air filter on there. When I had it in by the shop there in Pittsburgh, they had to, I had some pitting on the inside of the intake manifold, and they took care of that. I've since bought a new manifold, just hadn't had time to put it on yet, the intake manifold. You think just keep running or keep watching it, huh?
I'd keep running. Yeah, keep an eye on it. Just don't extend the drains past where you're not comfortable with that number. When that soot gets up to 6-7%, like Kevin said, get the oil out. It's going to be cumulative,
okay,
it's going to be a function of time. Yep.
Okay, because it did drop a couple of tenths, you know, since I put that OPS on there. It looks like, I mean, I don't know if that would do anything or not. Listen, I had another comment or question too. Where would I find out the year of this engine? How could I find that out? I called my dealer over here. They can't give me any information off the serial number.
Well, they should be able to figure that out from serial number, right?
Yeah, they should be able to.
Call Ethan. Yeah. Call here. Ask for Ethan. He could look it up. Right? You could.
Okay.
That, can't you?
I'll do that later. Great.
You'd be able to. Yeah.
Yeah, we should be able to figure. We should be able to get a data plate off of Detroit with the engine.
Okay, because it's supposed to be, you know. If it's a factory reman, you know, it's a factory reman, like I said, I bought it with 251,000 on it. I got 322,000 on it now. And that concerns me, that soot, because, well, because I buy into Kevin over there, that should be less than 1%, right?
Well, that's what we like to see the pre-emission Series 60s at, because I ran them for years, and that anytime mine crept up over that, we'd usually find a reason. And as the engine got older and you got blow by, it was, you know, more difficult to do that. But, you know, at 300,000 miles, a healthy Series 60 just won't show it. But keep running it. I mean, if it's running good, fuel economy is good, there may not be anything wrong. Let's go to Georgia. Tad, welcome to the program.
The surgeons of the trucking industry. How are we doing today?
All right, Dad. How are you?
Give me a scalpel and let me hit it. That's right, because you know what? You guys are the best. That's all I care about. And I tell you what, anybody's problems, just put it on a rollback, go to Pittsburgh Power, and we won't have any problems anymore. So, anyways, my question real quick to that previous caller. When he gets here, I went 400,000 on my first set of DPF filters, and my recommendation to him is don't send them out to get clean, because your downtime is 3 days, when for an extra $300, you can get brand new ones and only be down 1 day. That's my recommendation for that gentleman.
All right.
You don't even need a calculator to do that math, I guess, huh?
That's right.
Well, the newer trucks, you can go a long ways before you change the first set of filters. They recommend 300,000, but I went almost 470 on mine, but that's me. Number one, John, that oil, like I said, just banging oil. I mean, it's, like I said, keeping the temperatures down. I'm running around 193, and during the pulls, my fan's only coming on a couple times, as what we talked about. But I do have some good news. The regens have calmed down.
Oh, really? Okay.
I have not. Now, I told you before, and I talked to Ethan, had him his head scratching there. Every 2,700, I now have gone 4,000 miles. I have no lights. We still got the one code, but it's running great, okay. And fuel economy is still up above 9.8. And I just wanted to give you update you on that. They've calmed down, and I don't know if it's a myth or whatever, but I quit putting an additive in, and it stopped. And whether it's all cleaned out now, I don't know, but I haven't put any additives in 2 weeks. And my lights are gone, and now it's starting to go back to normal.
Interesting.
It just don't like the additives, because I can go back. Huh. I went back over my records before I came to you guys a year ago. I was doing additives, and that's when all my, because my first 450,000 miles, I only did two regens. I mean, a parts regen, and then when I started putting the additive in, is when my problem started. So my truck don't like additives.
That's interesting. Tad, I just hope that whatever is wrong with your truck isn't what's right with your truck. So
I don't know.
If you follow what I mean. So whatever that problem is, I hope this isn't why you're getting this crazy fuel mileage and stuff. And, you know, I'm glad that the I was sort of hoping that the regen thing was going to get worse so we could actually fix it. The problem with it is, the reason it was asking for so many... Yeah, go ahead.
We still got that code. But like I said, that code has been there since I took it to Freightliner a year and a half ago and had my filters put in.
All right, let's hold that right there. We'll get to a break. We'll come back. We've got plenty more. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. We're down to the final segment. We're going to get to as many calls as we can. We're going to head off to Pennsylvania. Adrian, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. I have one of the 2006 C15, one of the uncontrolled horsepower versions.
Okay.
I was just wondering if... it makes any sense for me to be looking at a new truck. I mean, this truck's been treating me well, and the biggest reason I'd be thinking about it is just to be able to go into California. I live in Washington, and there's a lot of, you know, that would make running out of Washington a whole lot easier. I don't know. I look at the numbers, and it seems like maybe if I got a little bit better fuel mileage in like 20 years, you know, it might pay for a new truck, you know. But I know they're getting a whole lot more reliable, and that's really my absolute biggest concern is I can't be you know, you don't make any money sitting on the side of the road. I was just
wondering
your guys' thoughts on, you know, should I just keep running this even without being able to go to California, or, you know, maybe,
well,
maybe if I decide to look at getting a new one, you know.
I'll jump in on that. This really, to me, is no longer a reliability issue or a cost issue with the emissions the way it used to be. Just like John said earlier, things have changed a lot. I'm very impressed with the new engines, with the new aerodynamics, with the new technology. So this isn't a reliability issue anymore. This is just a financial issue. You know, does it make financial sense to go buy a new truck? So I would set the maintenance reliability issue aside. What kind of fuel economy are you getting now?
You know, I don't keep as good a track as I should, but I used your app for about 2 months and I got 7.2.
That's healthy fuel economy. And if you wanted to focus on it, we could probably get it to 8.2. I mean, that wouldn't be out of the question on the truck you've got. If you wanted to invest some money into this one, and you might do 9 out of some of the new trucks. It's certainly a lot more common than it used to be. Is this one paid for?
Yeah, it's been paid for a while.
So we're not going to make up the cost of the new truck in fuel economy alone. So if we just look at numbers and expenses, that's not going to be enough. Sometimes you look at it and go, well, yeah, I know it's going to cost me a little more, but I want a new truck. And then you go get one. The other issue, and this is a whole lot harder to measure, is you're correct. Being in Washington State, a lot of the good freight moves up and down the I-5 corridor. So being able to go to California, if you live in Washington, can add a significant amount of revenue. But that's so individual that I can't put a formula on it. That's something you would have to start looking at, you know, when you're choosing loads, and you'd have to start keeping track of, okay, I'm leaving Washington and I'm going to Texas and I'm getting $1.84 a mile. But if I wanted to go to Southern California, I'd be getting $2.20 a mile. That's really hard to put any kind of a formula on. You know, if you had a really good business report and you were doing your accounting every month, be a little easier. So this isn't one of those questions that's really easy to answer. So, but I would set the maintenance aside. If that was your biggest concern, I wouldn't worry about it. I mean, you spec one of these new trucks and they're pretty darn impressive. So it really comes down to, do you want the payment?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I got 900, you know, almost 1 million miles on it. So it's kind of like, do I want to use my in-pray money for a down payment, or do I want to just buy, you know, just do an in-pray, you know? Especially
right.
If I start putting more money into this truck, that would keep me out of California for that much longer, you know? They ain't changing that anytime soon. So, that is probably the biggest issue, is not being able to go to California. Even getting a load to like Las Vegas or Reno or something like that, to get out of there, getting any kind of rate, you really need to bop over to California.
No, right, well, clearly that, yeah. Yeah, you
well,
know,
that million mile truck's going to be, but that million mile truck's going to be other maintenance as well. And unless you really, really took care of it, there are other things you're going to be looking at rear ends at some point. I don't know how old the transmission might be. There's a lot of other stuff involved. You know, to me, if it served you that well for 1 million miles, I would probably take that money that you've banked, I'd go the new truck route personally. And to ignore California to me is insane. I mean, it's the third largest economy in the world if you separated it from the rest of the United States. So to walk away from that is just, you know, to me, silly. I don't think that makes any sense at all.
You know, and I was just going to address that. There are a lot of times if I'm talking to an owner-operator, you know, certainly east of the Mississippi, you can ignore California. You don't need to go. The rates going in and out of California just aren't that much better, and there's plenty of freight all over. That changes, though, if you're Washington and Oregon especially. you know, even out west, you can live in Colorado and run east all the time and make a ton of money. But living in Washington and Oregon, a lot of that freight does travel up and down that I-5 corridor. So if you live in those two states and, you know, California, being able to run California opens up a lot of opportunities.
Absolutely. Yep. And again, I'm, you know, I'm a fan, you know, the new, I'm really, really the new Detroit, you know, the new DD15 and the numbers these guys are knocking down, you know, fuel mileage wise, that pays for itself in a hurry. I mean, you get a new Cascadia with all the cool aero stuff on it and the right gear and that new D12 transmission. And you got 9.5 mile per gallon machine without trying. So it's, you know, to me, that's pretty good, you know, so that would pay for itself in a hurry, especially, you know, if you look at the whole truck, Kevin, it's not just the engine. So the guy's got some money saved up for an engine rebuild. You know, he's going to dump 25 to 30 grand into that, or, you know, he's got a really nice down payment on the new truck.
Yeah, no, I agree. So, you know, there we could sit here and do a, you know, the long, and that's kind of why I said if you had a business report, we could look at where his maintenance costs are, where his fuel costs are, where his revenue is. But it's a math issue now. That's why I wanted to kind of steer him away from the, you know, the reliability of the new truck, because I'm with you, and it took me a decade. I mean, 10 years, I was saying, don't go near them. Don't buy a new truck. I build a glider if you want something new. But that whole time, I was also saying, there will come a day when I won't have to say this anymore. We went through it with cars in the 70s, and we got through it. And cars today are amazing pieces of engineering marvel to me.
They are.
I'm blown away by the quality of cars today and how trouble-free they are and the performance and really every way we could measure them. And I knew that at some point we would get there with trucks, and we're not all the way there yet, like you said early, but I'm impressed. If I were going, I would be excited to go out and spec a new truck today.
Yeah, me too. I agree.
Yeah. Let's, can we get one more in here? Let's try this one. Brad in Florida, you got about a minute and a half.
Hey, Kevin, how are you doing?
Good. What can we help you with?
Well, I have a DD15 2011, one of those trucks you can say stay away from. Diesel said that the one box is toast. I'm not 100% convinced of that, but going an aux conversion code over and over and over, can't get it to go away. Any suggestions?
It's just strictly the NOx conversion code. Has the NOx sensor been checked and tested? Do we know we've got good flow from the def doser? I mean,
yeah.
They gone through all the whole troubleshooting tree to make sure everything's working correctly?
Yeah, and then as soon as it'll say that it's working at 80%, and as soon as I put the truck underneath the load and go up a hill, comes right back.
Code's there in the D-rate too. There's a good chance it is the one box then. The only thing you could replace in the one box are the DPF filters, and they're inexpensive and easy. There's two of them that go in there, and which is kind of neat that they use two rather than one like everybody else. But if the SCR, there's a catalytic converter. SCR is a combination of the DEF, the injected DEF that goes through a mixer, and then it goes into a catalytic converter. And when that stops converting, it's covered in precious metals. And you know, if you've gone a little time with, if you've had another issue that could lead to that going bad, if the def doser wasn't atomizing properly or something like that, you could end up with that thing clogged up. But or the precious metals are coated now and it doesn't react like it should to knock the lower the NOx. So that's a definite. You can't just change that part. So when the catalytic converter goes bad, you do have to change the whole one box. If you've got
Sorry, hate to cut you off, John, but we've got to wrap this up. We are all out of time. We'll do it again next week. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to John and Ethan from Pittsburgh Power for doing all the heavy lifting. We'll see you next time. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody. Thanks. We'll see you back here tomorrow for Destination Health.